Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. Actually, today I'm broadcasting from Costa Rica from a tropical rainforest. But anyway, I'll tell you more about that later. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area and the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with over 200,000 listeners in over 80 countries. During the first hour from 2 p.m. To 3 p.m. today, I'll be interviewing my good friend Simon Parks, who has lots of interesting things to say. I'm sure you'll find his interview really out of this world. Then during the second hour, from 3 to 4 p.m., I'll have a wonderful psychic named Todd Rolson at the top of the hour, followed by another healing miracle at Mount Shasta with Tammy Chapman, who had her legs healed at the mountain last year. Her interview will then be followed by a segment I did earlier this year at a fascinating museum at a place called Paracas on the coast of Peru. The museum itself contains hybrid human extraterrestrial skulls, and during part of the show, I'll be channeling these entities and giving you messages on why they were here and what they were trying to accomplish. It should be really fascinating. Hope you like it. Before we start, I'd like to thank everyone's support so much for this program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the top upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate everyone's help and support, because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. And with that, I'd also like to really thank Corey and Sol and Kirkland for their wonderful support, and everyone around the planet who've helped supported the program and helped me raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. I also like to thank the many sponsors of this show. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers. Any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for their goods and services. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website, providing wonderful support, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting the show, and of course Adama and the beautiful people of Telos and the Hollow Earth, who healed my right eye, the vision in my right eye week before last, my angelic and earthly family, and Eric at KKNW. I have a wonderful spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. If you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who've passed on or contact your guides, please send me an email anytime to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me in the United States at 509-750-9793. My next galactic conference will be held in Olympia, Washington, and my fifth conference on April 12th to the 16th. If you'd like to register before the end of the year, the cost is only $55 for the entire conference. If you'd like to register, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or call me at 509-750-9793. We'll be going to Simon in just a minute, but I wanted to tell you some wonderful psychic fairs coming up on September 29th, a week from tomorrow, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. I'll be having a wonderful Out of This World Psychic Wisdom fair in Olympia, Washington at 9101 Stillicum Road Southeast. It's a free fair, so I hope you can come. If you'd like to be a vendor at any of my events, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I also have some good news. Water filters are being delivered today at the Palooka Rodeo Grounds on the Hopi Indian Reservation in Arizona by a gentleman named Gene Lazar. The Hopi Indians have been drinking carcinogenic water for many years, and the U.S. government has failed to help them. So several of us got together, including Leon McLaughlin of the Clean Water Foundation of Washington, Martha Childress of the Natural Choice Network, Michiko Hayashi, the Modal Peace Project in Tokyo, and myself all stepped in to raise money, and as well as many other people, to buy and have these water units delivered to the Hopi Indians so they can finally start drinking clean, fresh water today that won't kill them. Thank you, everyone, so much for helping out on this beautiful effort. Today is September 21st, and it's the fall equinox. This is a very special day because today is one of the 2 days out of the year when the days and nights are equal in length. The other is the spring equinox. To celebrate the fall equinox, I'd like to bring in my good friend Simon Parks, live from England, on the show. Simon, how are you today?
Hello, Ted. Every time I speak to you, you're up a mountain.
I am. I am. I'm in a cloud forest right now, and I can see there are a few butterflies flying around. It's partially cloudy. It's a beautiful day, and it's funny, when the sun goes down, this whole forest comes alive. It's nothing like a quiet forest. You have all kinds of critters out there, crickets and grasshoppers probably, and all kinds of animals making all kinds of noise. So, but it's a beautiful place. It's very quiet and very, very peaceful. Costa Rica itself abolished its military in 1947, Simon. So they spend $0 on the military, and they spend the money instead, 25% on education and 25% on the environment. So it's a different kind of country. It has the highest standard of living in Central America, and it's I think it's one of the nicest places to live on the planet.
That's really interesting that I didn't know that. I think the world's media goes out of its way not to tell people that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's actually an enclave of Americans living in Costa Rica. They refused to fight in the Korean War and also in the Vietnam War, and they came down here and they established a community. They're Quakers, and they're very peaceful, beautiful, loving people, and there's about 5,000 now in a community down here. And many of them retain their American passports, and they go back and forth between Costa Rica and the United States. But there's a different feeling when you get to a country where no monies are spent in the military. There just isn't the same kind of vibration. And the government has a lot more money to spend on education, on the environment, to create a much higher standard of living than if your monies are going into weapons and conflicts around the world.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And how long are you in Costa Rica for, Ted?
I'm here through next week, and then I come back to the U.S., and I'll be back in the studio again next Friday. But I took your advice, Simon, that I needed a vacation, so that's what I'm having now. Having a vacation. And before we start, my friend, I want everyone around, who's listening today to please send lots of love and light and positive thoughts to Simon. You had some difficulties recently, and I know that the good energy everyone can send to him today will really help make you feel better.
Well, thank you, Ted. It's very fashionable in our industry to put down every negative force or a piece of bad luck to say, oh, I was attacked. But I'm fairly confident that what happened to me was an attack, because it started at 6 p.m. On Saturday evening and didn't let up until 6 a.m. on the Sunday morning. That's two sixes. And I was in hospital something like 9 hours. I get this maybe once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. And somebody really doesn't like, you know, what I do. And it was interesting that I just agreed to do the Kerry Cassidy radio show, to go on Kerry Cassidy's radio show. And I had to postpone that because of the attack. But I did do it two or three days back. So, you know, I suppose it's part of the world that we live in. And
right.
You know, we just have to keep going and say, look, it's going to end at some point in terms of these attacks.
Sure.
That there'll just be no place for them. If you can hear noise in the background, Ted, that's just the young kittens just deciding to empty the waste basket. So don't worry about the noise.
I thought it was the cats when I heard that.
Yes.
Actually, that was.
So thank you, Ted. I'll accept any loving, healing energy. Yes, please. Be very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. One of the things. I listened to your wonderful interview with Kerry Cassidy, and one of the questions is whether JFK Jr. is alive. And so I did ask President Kennedy over the. Since I saw that this weekend, JFK is Jr. is actually by his side. He's alive in the fifth dimension, but not in this dimension. So
right. I was asked that question, and I said, I don't know, but I know a man who channels JFK.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Simon.
Well, I didn't want to give your name because I hadn't got permission to do so, but I did just mention you like that, you know.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, if you have any questions of President Kennedy, please forward them on. He said he'd be happy to answer them for you. So I wanted to tell you, I was in Mount Shasta about a week and a half ago, and I got in touch with one of the spirits of one of the high priests of Telos, which is underneath Mount Shasta, a fellow named Adama, and he healed my right eye. Did I tell you about that?
Well, you only briefly mentioned it, and I said, could we talk about it on the radio show, because I wanted to hear more about it. Because you remember, Ted, that since you did at least two or three visits there over the last few months, a number of my clients that I see have been on that tour with you, and each person had a very striking story to tell me, which was great, but nobody had had an eye healed. So I did want to hear about that.
Well, I had 42 years ago in college, I had stared at the sun in my right eye too long and sunburned my retina. And I've had blurry, farsighted vision in that eye ever since that time. And one night I dreamt I was talking to Adama, one of the high priests of Telos, and he asked me if I wanted a healing. And I said, yes, I'd love one. So the next morning I woke up and I got the message, look in your, just look, do some, look around with your eyes. And I noticed that my vision in my right eye was crystal clear. It was 2015. It was like 2030, 2040. Now it's 2015 in the right eye. And before my vision was good, but both of them are actually really good. 2010, 2015 on both fighter pilot eyes. So I can see crystal clear. I can see like when I was a teenager. And I am so happy. I can't tell you how happy I am. There was
Ted, was there any discomfort in the morning? Was there any red marks or any pain or anything like that?
Nothing. What Adama said, he said two things. He said you were ready for the healing, and number two, because spiritually you can see things clearly now, it was time for your third dimensional body to catch up, and for your eyesight, because you can see things crystal clear on a spiritual level in the fifth dimension, he said it was time for you to be able to see crystal clear in the third dimension. So that's why they fixed my eye. So now I can see crystal clear in both eyes, 2010, 2015 in both.
See, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? It's about the physical body and the energy body actually working together in balance.
That's right. And what I've told people before, when they have a physical problem, it's always related to a spiritual issue. And if you can correct the spiritual condition, then you can correct the physical condition. You see, so. That's how it worked out. So I'm very happy. I can't tell you how happy I am. So,
hey, Ted, I know you're 4,500 feet up a very beautiful mountain, but did any questions from the audience make their way up to you?
Yes, they did. let me get them here. Let me get them out. Let me get them out here. Or just a moment here. Here, I've got a bunch of questions for you. Okay, we have a lot of questions. First off, this is about the fires in Northern California. A real quick one. That the fires themselves were caused by, maybe we talked about this before, but many of the fires were caused by particle beam weapons, and a lot of the fires weren't even caused by humans. They were caused by reptilians and negative elements trying to cause trouble in Northern California. I don't know what you picked up on that, but that was kind of, it's a long question, but it's a kind of paraphrased of it.
It did come up on the Kerry Cassidy show. I jokingly say quite often, I don't know what it is that people have such a problem with California. Why do so many people have a dislike for California? Because California seems to get kicked as often as the bad guys can get them. The California fires are very unique. Some of the cars that have been incinerated, the heat was so great that the aluminum hubcaps had actually completely melted. So you can just imagine a burnt out car, and then just pools of molten metal where the aluminum has melted. Now that's not usually the case in a standard fire. So I do agree with energy weapons. I think most of these energy weapons were fired from helicopter. I think in some instances they were fired from space, and in one or two cases from the ground. I'm aware of some years ago now, what we just loosely call a firefight in Africa between humans. In actual fact, it was a mixed British and American military group, and what we call the grey aliens.
Oh, okay.
That happened in Africa some years ago, and I had the great honor of talking to one of the guys who survived that and who was able to tell me a little bit about it. The battling in California does strike me as a little bit like that. In other words, you've got two factions at each other. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the poor old homesteaders are the ones who get caught in the middle of it. And this describes why you would have a house burnt to the ground, but then a tree in its leaves there. Because an energy beam weapon, actually, for those who've not really come into contact with such a weapon, it's not a hot beam. It's what we call a cold beam. When it fires, it doesn't actually, it's not like a laser beam. These weapons are different, and therefore the heat is, or the effect, when it strikes an object, that's when it becomes hot, and it's very localized. So you would get one car incinerated and a car next to it not touched at all. So the fires in California are not natural. They are the cause of, in my opinion, two factions fighting it out amongst themselves. And it's the first time in my knowledge that such a fight has occurred above ground on the US. I know there have been lots of battles and military bases underground, but to my knowledge, it's the first time this has happened outside.
Huh. It was very, very, very interesting because there was a fire called the Carr Fire, C-A-R-R fire, in Redding, California, Simon, where homes were like, half of them were destroyed, but half of them weren't. Cars were melted. The bumpers were melted. The license plates were melted, but barely just a few feet away, you had trees and flowers. Everything was just fine. So people just it was the weirdest thing, and people were talking about it and asking what was going on here because they just didn't understand.
That's the big giveaway that when a fire is not consistent, it's because huge amounts of energy are concentrated at one point, and then as you just go 3 feet away from that point, the devastating effect drops right off. And this is what, if you haven't experienced these weapons, you wouldn't understand it, because if you throw a load of gasoline down on the ground and set fire to it, well, if you hold a leaf from a tree near it, the leaf will shrivel. But these energy weapons don't operate like that. They don't have the same physics. So therefore, the object they strike is superheated and destroyed. But something that's not connected to it, there's just no effect to it at all. And that is the absolute giveaway that something non-standard is being used. So, you know, and it's just, and I would say that although I agree with the idea that Agenda 21 was trying to move people away from these properties and put them in the city, I actually think now that the local authorities at the top highest level want to get people out of that part of California, because possibly there's something running around there that isn't particularly good. So I think the federal state and the states will seek to prevent homesteaders rebuilding because it might be that this is going to have another cycle of this. So it's a very, very fascinating time.
Interesting. Well, I know there's a lot of people in Northern California listening today, and if anyone has stories, please email them to me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. One thing you mentioned earlier on Carrie Cassidy's interview was that this time period, this fall, October, November, December 2018, was a very critical time for humanity, and we all need to redouble our efforts to help humanity ascend. Would you like to elaborate on that a little bit, Simon?
Yes, I for about maybe a year and a half, I've always felt that the back end of this year, the fall of 2018, was absolutely crucial. You know, we've had many crucial times on this planet, but I really feel that if what I'm hoping comes out of Washington, D.C., either October, November, December, that will be the kickstart for many other disclosures of information. And with the Supreme Judge Kavanaugh now being accused of sexual misconduct, it just goes to show just how desperate certain people are to keep a supreme judge from taking his office. Because as soon as that supreme judge takes his office, then the next phase of disclosure goes into overdrive. So there are certain people now who are, I use the word, hell-bent, deliberately, hell-bent on trying to prevent Kavanaugh taking his position, because they are trying to slow up what might come. You see, I was quite happy to accept there were 25,000 indictments, but I have been given evidence that there are in excess of 50,000 indictments now. I've seen evidence, and I actually now convinced there are over 50,000 indictments of mostly US citizens, not exclusively in the US, some are abroad, but they are mostly US citizens in the Americas. And if in October, November, December, some of those indictments become opened and acted upon, then it opens the way for humans to begin to understand what's really going on in the world. So it's very important. If we don't get something happening October, November, December, then it makes it a lot harder for humanity in the following year, 2019.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Simon. One last follow-up question from a listener. What's going on now with Judge Kavanaugh's nomination, and how do you think that will turn out?
I think that he will be put into post. I think the votes will be incredibly low. You know, you would have expected under normal circumstances, I don't know, 75, 85, it would have been a shoo-in. But under the circumstances, I think it'll be quite close. There's a faction of the Democrats who are trying to push for everything to be frozen. Mm-hmm. Where the Republicans clearly want to get this all sorted, and Trump wants to get it sorted because he wants the judge to be in office. So how do I see it happening? I think that as it stands, Kavanaugh will go in. I think he will be elected because on Monday he's got another session with the senators, and the woman who has accused him of this sexual misbehavior has been invited to attend, which is very interesting. And President Trump has said that he's very interested to hear what she has to say. He said he particularly wants to hear what she's got to talk about. Now, I'm not sure that she'll turn up. The information I'm getting is that she may well not turn up. Now, if she doesn't turn up, I think that speaks volumes. Anyway, that's the situation. We can't have the American machinery grinding to a halt. We do need that supreme judge in. And it's nothing even in court. I mean, this woman hasn't even gone to court. All she's done is go to the newspapers. So that's where we are with it.
It's interesting, isn't it, how these so-called witnesses show up at the last minute like a confirmation hearing, and you don't know anything about the credibility. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but
Well, Ted, I think yeah. You see, look, the problem I have with this is that she says she was 15 and he was 17. So why is she going public now? Right. This man has been a judge for in 12 years. She had all of this time to do something about it. Why now, at the moment, that this man is going to push President Trump's majority on the Supreme Council by one? So I'm suspicious at the timing of this.
Sure.
I don't have a problem with what's happening and it should be investigated, but my problem is why now? It's almost as if someone's gone to her and said, you know, you need to do this or you need to speak out. If this is true, I wish she'd done this over the last 12 years.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Right. Yeah. Why wait till now? Yeah. Well, I think he will get the nomination. It'll be close, but I think, I think people are ready for a change, and I think he'll get the nomination. One thing that we talked about, I think it was last week, there was a picture of Angela Merkel and President Trump, and Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany, was holding her hands up, and President Trump was pointing at her. You said something very interesting about that. Would you like to share that?
Yes, I can do it. it's not widely known. It's very funny because I did one of my meetings in London, and a person came up who was Austrian or German, and they had also heard the same story that I heard, which was great because it was confirmation for me. So the photograph is basically a conference where the Chancellor of Germany was in conference with the President of the US, and they were very animated. And the information I have is that President Trump had said to the Chancellor of Germany, you should pay compensation to the people of Poland for what Adolf Hitler and the Nazis did back in the 1940s. You're a very, very rich country now, to Germany. You've got lots of money. I think there were some diabolical, really bad things done. I think you should pay for that. And that didn't go down very well. That didn't go down. Chancellor of Germany was like, horrified at that. So what that tells us is not the exciting news snippet of the story. What it tells us is the mind of President Trump, where President Trump is saying, here you are, a very wealthy country. Here's a very poor country. Poland is actually relatively poor compared to Germany. I think you should help out. So it begins to show how Trump, A, has a great knowledge of Europe. He actually knows quite a lot about European history. And B, he's got a conscience, and he's basically saying, you know, I think that you need to do something about it. Now, why that is particularly interesting is there are still rumours that will not go away that somehow Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, is related to Adolf Hitler. There is constant story that will not go away. They're related. And so it's very interesting that President Trump said to her, you have responsibility for what happened during the Nazi era in Poland.
It's interesting you bring that up, Simon, because I don't know whether this has any credence or not, but I've heard that both Angela Merkel and Hillary Clinton were actually daughters of Adolf Hitler. They were smuggled into Germany and the United States to grow up. I don't know if it's true, but I don't know if you'd heard that or not, but that's what I've heard too, and this from the same similar sources.
What I'd heard was that some genetic material might have been saved and used or added. So I wasn't of the opinion that they were daughters in the true sense of the word, but I was of the opinion that there was a strong possibility that there was some genetic connection. And it is very interesting that the President of the United States of America has put some emotional pressure on the leader of Germany, which is a very interesting statement. based on, you know, what we're talking about now. I mean, maybe he's heard the same sort of rumors, possibly, and he's saying, you know, you should be helping out.
Fascinating. Well, if Germany did help Poland, I think that would be a good thing. I think that would be a good thing. We have another question, Simon, from many observatories being closed down around the world under strange circumstances where the FBI, I've read where the FBI came in and closed down an observatory in New Mexico without really much comment. What have you heard? Have you heard much about that, by the way?
Yeah, it's been quite hot on the internet, social media. It's been made worse by the FBI saying that the reason that they closed this, the Sunspot Observatory in New Mexico, because there was some criminal activity taking place there. And then when people asked them, well, why did you evacuate all of the staff? They said, well, you know, because we wanted to keep everybody safe, which isn't a very good answer. What we know is that some very, very trusting people are believing the statement by the FBI. They're saying, oh, well, there you are, then it's nothing to worry about. It was a bit of criminal activity. We don't need to worry about it. And I'm afraid that's a very naive view, because if you actually dig down, what you find is that not only was the Sunspot Observatory closed by the FBI, but two similar observatories in Hawaii were closed down. The observatory in Chile was closed down. The observatory in Pennsylvania was closed down. And the observatory in Australia was closed down. So all at the same time, something like six telescopes, ground earth-based telescopes, were all closed at the same time. Now, don't tell me that there was criminal activity in all of those installations thousands of miles apart. It's nonsense. And when you have criminal activity, what tends to happen is that cops turn up in cars with blue lights on them, and they sure. go and do what they do. They don't descend out of Black Hawk helicopters. And that's exactly what happened here. These men who we're told are FBI arrived in Black Hawk helicopters. We also know that the post office, the major post office in New Mexico, which was connected to this observatory, was also closed down. The reason for that was that there was some communications being passed between the staff at the observatory and the workers at the post office. And the reason was that these sunspot telescopes around the planet were picking up alien spacecraft, and that's the only word I can give you, alien spacecraft, or if we don't want to be so specific, we can say anomalies. The telescope at New Mexico is the finest sun telescope in the world. It is the best pictures, the most wonderful clarity. And it was showing, I understand from what I've been told, it was showing some pretty fine pictures of things around the sun that shouldn't have been there. Sure. And the workers wanted to talk about this, and the best way for them was the post office. And they were telling people and trying to get messages out. And so you have to remember, of course, that most of these observatories are paid for by the American government. They may be in other countries. Mm-hmm. Like Australia and Chile, but they are paid for by the US. And the final point on this, Ted, is people are saying, well, hang on a minute, if President Trump is such a good chap, why is he closing all of these telescopes down? Doesn't he want to tell the truth? The point is that I think, like you, Ted, and like many of your listeners, that we need to tell the truth like now. Mm-hmm. But there are most people in Washington, D.C. want to tell the truth slowly. They want the truth to come out slowly. And what they were concerned about, I understand, was that this would have blown the whole lid off it. If they'd suddenly had these crystal clear pictures of strange craft around the sun, then they would have lost their their 5-year plan to tell the truth. So that's what I understand about it, Ted.
Interesting. A friend of mine, Jan Jan Erik in Norway sent me a link to a YouTube, which I viewed just a couple days ago, and it showed they were leaked images from one of the observatories, Simon, where they showed it looked like spacecraft around the sun, a whole bunch of spacecraft coming in, and the YouTube video stated that the employees of this observatory thought that the people should be told, so they took the footage and released it on YouTube. I don't know if it's still available now, but I did see it a few days ago.
Yes, there's more to this story. We'd have to be a bit careful now. I'll go as close as I can here.
You don't have to. Don't say anything that.
No, I won't.
Get you in hot water. Just
no, I'm sure. I just don't want people. If I'm choosing my words carefully, I want to explain to people why I'm choosing my words carefully.
Sure.
They're the guy who oversees all of these observatories. There is a guy who oversees all of them. Mm-hmm. And he is in an organization that is really well known to most Americans.
Okay.
And he wanted to forward the what we call the disclosure plan, telling mm-hmm. people of Earth that there really are creatures, you know, and humans like us, but then don't live here. They live somewhere else.
Right.
And he'd had a device which enabled communication. Now, I've had the great privilege of meeting this man
mm-hmm.
a couple of years ago in a hotel, mm-hmm. motel. Mm-hmm. And I was attacked heavily at that meeting, and I spent mm-hmm. most of the time vomiting blood.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. But it didn't prevent me from having some conversation with him and meeting him. He's a really good man. He's a very genuine man. But I did say to him, look, you are funded by the United States of America. Do you really think that they're going to let you go along with your plan? And he right. said, well, you know, I've got to go with it. I've got to do it. I've got to try it. I've got to go with it. So what I wanted to say was, on one hand, that's the backdrop to the story here.
Sure.
And on the bit that's exciting... is that our evolution on this planet and the planet's evolution, and for that matter, all of the planets in the solar system, certainly around us, are evolving because of the particular light frequency coming from the sun. We tend to think of the sun as producing heat, but of course, heat is nothing more than light energy. It's a different frequency. Now, right. it's that frequency that is raising the temperature of the planet. Global warming, as told by those people who lie, that's why President Trump says he doesn't believe in global warming, and he's absolutely correct. Probably 1 degree centigrade is the increase from burning fossil fuels. All of the rest of this increase is because of a natural interaction between the sun's energy light and the Earth. And what these alien craft were doing was tweaking the frequency of the energy, because the human plan is slightly behind schedule. There have been some reports on the internet that the energy wave was coming in and was too strong and was going to... basically fry us all, and then the aliens came along and that's not my understanding. My understanding is that the frequency had to be changed because the bad guys have done a reasonably good job from their perspective in slowing up or slowing down the development of humanity. And so we had a little bit of help with these craft arriving to just change the frequency so that it's going to have more of an effect and break us free. So it's been a fantastic couple of weeks. It's been really exciting. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to be fearful of. It's all good news. It's all exciting. But, of course, we do see the dark hand sometimes of evil moving in and out from time to time.
Sure, right. Well, whoever that person was that helped in the release of this these YouTube videos of these spacecraft coming into the sun, I want to thank I want to thank him so much for doing that, and I know everyone listening today also appreciates him as well. You know, my next question from a listener was, how is the sun responsible for the evolution of this planet? And you've kind of answered that in a way, that the vibration from the sun is helping the ascension process on this planet. Is that right, Simon?
Every system, solar system, every system has binary star. One is a sun that you can see with your human eyes, and the other is a star that you cannot. Adolf Hitler, we've mentioned him already, we don't want to give him too much of a storyboard here, but Adolf right. Hitler understood this because Hitler had strong connection with negative aliens. He and some of his troops, special troops, wore a special badge which was called the Black Sun, and for every light sun there's a dark star or a black sun, and the two are symbiotic, like yin and yang. And the light sun always raises the vibrational life force of the planets within its charge, within its locality. So throughout all of this dimension, at least, there are solar systems with binary stars, and one star acts as an anchor, which is the dark star or the black sun, and the other star is the light star, which evolves the planets. If we didn't have the sun, we would not evolve. It is the sun's changing of frequency which is actually kick-starting humanity. It does to our DNA, it does to our energy. There's nothing physical here, it's all energy going on. And I want to give people, before I finish, an example of this. If listeners think back 5 years ago, just 5 years ago, think how much truth has come out into the public eye in the last 5 years. And then if you go back a further 5 years and a further 5 years, how closeted and how blanketed and locked in people were. It's in the recent time that people have got the truth out, and others have accepted the truth. And, you know, think about all this terrible stuff with the Catholic Church in America, all of sure. this horrible stuff. Well, that's yeah. been going on for centuries, but it never mm-hmm. got out. It's coming out now because humans are asking questions. And that's because the vibrational rate of the sun is making us begin to look a little bit further afield.
My goodness, Simon, that what you've said is extremely profound, and I just learned something. Thank you so much. Because several listeners ask the same thing about how is the sun responsible for the evolution of the planet. There was a wonderful astrologer I had on my show 4 years ago named Susan Miller from New York City, and she said this. She was an astrologer, and she said, Ted, the planets are in alignment for a period of time of truth, that from this time on, 2014 through the 2020s and 30s, will become a time of truth for humanity on the planet, where people will learn the truth of so many things. And you just said it now again, that this is happening. And I think it's a good time. It's a refreshing time. And I know that the Schumann resonance, which is the vibration of planet Earth, has dramatically gone from 7.8 hertz to something now 200, somewhere over 200 hertz. And by the end of 2020, in about a little less than 2.5 years, we will surpass the vibration of love, which is 528 hertz, and go into 800 hertz as we ascend, as we shift into the fifth dimension. And as we do, people will be able to communicate telepathically. As language will become secondary, and it's a fascinating time. Really, it's a time to celebrate, to know that the negative entities, negative forces on this planet are on the way out, and their time is very short now.
You see, Ted, most of the animals on the Earth are adapting very, very well to this change in frequency. Now, some aren't, and there are some species that are dying out, not necessarily because of pollution or because of overhunting, right. but because their time is not now. They've had their time and the frequency is changing. But for most of the life on the Earth, what I call the dumb animals, and I don't mean that disrespectfully to them, but they automatically change. It is humans that are struggling because it's humans that have the right to choose. We have that higher consciousness to make a good choice or an evil choice. An animal doesn't. It has to eat, it has to move, it has to sleep, and that's its choice. So it doesn't have to be tested, but humans are tested, and we can make a good choice or a bad choice. And so for us, it's a struggle in this development because we are we're being pushed along, and we're either going willingly or we're not going so willingly, and that's the difference. So it's much harder actually for humans on the planet at the moment than it is for animals.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I've heard from psychic friends of mine, Simon, that cats and dogs and pets in this currently living on planet now, many of them will become human in their next lifetime. And I've actually, I don't know if you've talked to your cats about this, but I talked to my cat Fluffy recently, and he was saying the same thing, that he understood the ascension and he was ascending with it. So I think many animals will ascend with the planet.
Well, in modern day India, perhaps not as much now, but certainly was over the last 300 or 400 or 500 years, the cow, the white cow, had free rein to go wherever it was, and it was wrong to block a cow. Now, if you go back to ancient Egypt, it was the cat. The cat had the right to go wherever it wanted in the pyramid or in the temples, and if anybody tried to stop a cat, then their right arm was cut off. And if you look back to the last true pharaoh, which was Cleopatra, she had a very well-documented history. She liked leopards and tigers and panthers. And the ancient history of ancient Egypt is very much one of connected with cats. So cats, I don't want to miss dogs out here, but no, cats have always been seen as being not just of this earth. So when the earth goes through a change, we're going through several changes at the moment, it is the cat. If you have a domestic cat, their mood changes. A dog is more even. A dog can cope with this more evenly, but a cat, you will see some very big swings and roundabouts. So as I said, I'm excited about this time. It's, for me, it's not a negative time. It's a positive time, but it is a difficult time.
Sure. Right. I just got another question in from another listener, Simon. This is such an interesting topic. Catherine writes, hi, Simon. Can a person with multiple soul parts drop one part anytime after birth to resolve a conflict with other soul parts or families? If so, how does this process work in 20 words or less? Sorry, I just...
Right, okay. Well, that's because you're up a mountain. I've never been asked that question before.
Okay.
The answer is yes, but only if that person has resolved to do that, and only if doing so unlocks the key for others to evolve. In other words, I need to say that a bit more. If, for instance, a person's got three parts to their soul or four parts, doesn't matter what, and they incarnate into a family that is diametrically opposed to their soul makeup. So the parents reject the child, they hate it, etc. If the child can get the parents to love it, or if the parents can overcome their dislike for the child, then they've healed a multi-million year rift that existed between one star family and another star family. And then when that heals, that segment or that part of the soul, I don't think it goes. What I think it does is it doesn't have to express itself in the same way, and it becomes part of the whole. So over the planet at the moment, there are many people in a relationship that seem totally wrong. I don't mean that somebody likes the football on one day and the other person wants to go and do something else. I'm talking about deep-rooted spiritual perspectives based on star family. For instance, a Palladian mother and father giving birth to a baby with a largely reptilian soul in it.
Mm-hmm,
and this has happened greatly, but it's designed, I think, to see how humanity can work this out, how we work it out. So the answer is yes to the questioner, providing that A, the person is voluntarily doing it, and B, to do so actually brings healing to those around you. It's a great question.
Interesting. Okay, thanks so much, Catherine, for sending that. Here's another one from Rebecca in Olympia, Washington. It was a news story, and I wanted to ask you about it. You probably heard about it. I didn't even know what happened. It was actually on Russia Today News, RT News, wasn't in our media, where a Boeing 777 almost crashed flying into New York. It was flying from, It was on, I believe it was an Indian flight from New Delhi to New York, lost all flight control systems as it just approached New York. It was actually on 9/11. From India, and the article states that she's asked about it. The article states that this was a possible replay of 9/11 back in 2001. Fortunately, it was avoided, and all the passengers landed safe. I don't know if you'd heard about that. Perhaps it was an accident. Yeah, and anything on that would be appreciated.
We can add to it, because around the same time, flights from other countries were reporting poisoning amongst the passengers. And in three instances, I think Britain to India, Britain to Spain, I can't remember the other one, they made not emergency landings, but when they landed, the ambulance paramedics were there, fire were there. And basically, the passengers were reporting a poisoning, like a food poisoning bug. And the information that I've seen was there was possibly a member of staff who didn't really appear to be a member of staff. And I think what we've got is not too complicated, is that somebody is sending warning messages to President Trump saying, we have the power to send aircraft crashing. We can do these things 30,000 feet up in the sky, don't push us. You talked about the connection with 9/11, and I think that's not a mistake. That's very deliberate. So I see that incident as part of a small group of people who wanted to send a message to the President of the United States saying, stop this crusade that you're on, because we have the power to knock aircraft out of the sky. That's what it was all about.
I see, Simon. Well, my friend, we've got about a minute and a half left, and I wanted to give you this time to wrap up your wonderful interview today. And as always, I really appreciate you coming on, Simon. Thank you so much.
Well, no, I'm always very, very grateful for you inviting me. I mean, you're just this globe-trotting postcard. If you're not out Mount Shasta, then you're up some mountain with a monkey and a palm tree or something. And I mean, that's just fantastic because, you know, most of our daily lives, we look at a sidewalk and concrete and cars. So you bring light and joy to many of us.
Thank you.
No different. So I just say that, you know, this is a roller coaster, you know, and everyone who's listening to this, you are just so lucky to be here on this planet. You may not think that. You may have a friend who's dying of cancer. You may have lost your job. And I understand in the sense that can give terrible, terrible pain. But if you're alive, you're here for a reason. Please, right. please don't sit in your armchair and just worry your world away. Go out there and live your life. And try and be a great example for everybody around you.
What good advice, Simon. Thank you as always for your wonderful advice. Please send lots of love and light to Simon because he wasn't feeling well recently. And I hope please stay tuned for my next hour. Thank you again, Simon, so much for coming on today.
God bless. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, my friend. Bye-bye.